News Talk 830 WCCO, KMNB HD2, Minneapolis, St. Paul, a radio.com station. CBS News Special Report, Election 2020, America Decides.
Joe, you're going to be the next president of the United States.
That record number of Americans, they made it clear. They want the country to come together, not continue to pull apart.
Here's White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy.
President-elect Joe Biden and his running mate, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, are getting set to address the nation tonight from the Chase Center in Wilmington, Delaware. Large screens and a stage are set up just as they were when Mr. Biden accepted his party's nomination in August. Supporters have driven in and they're expected to honk their horns in support of the team that voters have chosen to lead the country into the 2020s. CBS's Bo Erickson, who covered Mr. Biden's run, is with us live from Wilmington tonight. Bo, what is the expectation for the president-elect's address to the country?
We're expecting to hear that message of unity that former Vice President Joe Biden began running on 562 days ago when he launched his campaign in Pittsburgh. We're expected to hear him reach out to both Democrats, independents, and Republicans try to bridge this divide that he's talked that's plaguing the country. We're also expected to hear him talk about the coronavirus and how he will differ handling that from President Trump. And we're also expecting to hear him talk about racial justice in America as well.
The motorcade in which Mr. Biden is riding has just left the Biden residence in Wilmington, heading to the Chase Center, where Bo Erickson is live. Bo, thank you very much for joining us. He's expected to be introduced by Kamala Harris, who will in 74 days become the nation's first female vice president. It was 48 years ago tonight that Mike Wallace on CBS TV ran down the Delaware Senate race on election night, 1972.
29-year-old Joseph Biden. As I said earlier, he's the new Castle County Councilman. He'll be 30 years old enough to get into the Senate should he win on November the 20th. And he's run an extraordinary campaign. From 38 points down in August, he's come all the way up to be neck and neck with Senator Caleb Boggs.
In the end, Joe Biden defeated that Republican incumbent by about 3,000 votes 48 years ago tonight. Now he declares victory after his third run for the presidency. CBS News contributor Peter Mayer is with us. Peter, history once again unfolding before our ears tonight.
Isn't that a fascinating bit of sound to hear there, Stephen? From the get-go, Joe Biden knows all about close elections, and every election outcome, of course, carries its own history. As we just heard, Mr. Biden began his national-level political career as one of the youngest U.S. senators in history, just 30 years old when he took office amidst the tragedy of that horrific accident that took the lives of his wife and young daughter. He went on to six Senate elections before becoming vice president for President Obama. Now he'll be the oldest president at exactly 78 years and 2 months old on Inauguration Day. He'll be the 15th vice president to become president. His own VP, his running mate, Senator Kamala Harris, as you said, will be the first woman, the first minority, a person of black and Indian descent to hold the second most powerful office in the land. Important to note here that during the primary, when CBS News correspondent Ed O'Keefe asked how she'd describe herself, without hesitation, Kamala Harris said, as an American. In coming days, I think it's going to be very important, Stephen, of course, something of an understatement there, to hear exactly what role she will take in the new administration.
Peter Mayer, on the role that Kamala Harris will have as the first female vice president, as a vice president to Joe Biden, who himself was a vice president. And Kamala Harris said in an interview earlier this year, when she got the nod to be on Joe Biden's ticket, that Joe Biden served for her as a model for what a vice president ought to be, as someone who was a partner and advisor to Barack Obama. CBS News political analyst Leonard Steinhorn today was among the throngs of young people who were cheering in front of the White House when the news that the Biden-Harris ticket had won late this morning. Lenny, what did it sound like in downtown D.C. today?
Well, Stephen, it wasn't just young people. It was people of all ages. It was parents bringing their children, even people carrying their pets with them. You saw every artery leading to the White House with cars honking their horns, people cheering, arms up in the air with a sort of a sense of joy. This brought together all of these people who have been waiting 4 years, living through what they said were years of division and grievance, and the people on the streets felt as if a weight had been lifted from their shoulders. The feel out there was a sense of history, a sense of redemption, a sense of relief and joy, an affirmation that our democracy isn't broken, that the people's voices had been heard. There was also this patriotic feel, Stephen. People were waving flags. They were pointing to their children about what all of the markers of history were about, feeling that they were in this moment of change that will be written about in the years ahead. There are two quotes that stood out to me. One guy who was selling water on the streets was basically shouting at the top of his lungs, "This is what America is all about." And another, a smiling police officer who just happened to pass me, saying things randomly, you know, because they so overwhelmed, saying, "It's so nice to see people happy again," because they've lived through the protest, they've lived through the anger. They've lifted with the people just staring each other down and sort of with the hostility between so many Americans. For that particular police officer to see the joy in the streets, that was really a gift from American politics to her.
Leonard Steinhorn was among the throngs in downtown D.C. There were celebrations in Times Square and in Philadelphia and in cities all across the country today. Supportive and congratulatory messages have come in from world leaders all over, but not many from Republicans here at home. The president, Donald Trump, insists today that he won the election, and his campaign says on behalf of the 70 million Americans who voted for Mr. Trump, the fight is not over. We will now have to see how we move forward as a country together, and that's a key question tonight. The president's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, said that Mr. Trump will follow through with his threat to unleash a new round of lawsuits on Monday. Joining us now, CBS News legal analyst Lori Levinson. Lori, the president's talking about more lawsuits to come, but we also know that it's true that there is a transition that's already underway as we begin this 74-day interregnum before the next inauguration.
Absolutely. In fact, there's been a transition that's been going on for 6 months because we have the Presidential Transition Act, and that provides for all the major agencies to be working together with who might be in the new administration so that there can be a smooth transition. People can expect that this is a very large government with a lot of offices. The Biden folks are focusing on the White House and getting their new cabinet together, but for every agency, there is someone designated to work with the president-elect to make sure there's a smooth transition.
And, you know, look, you mentioned it. It's pretty straightforward and clear that this is a process that is in the law, where the Trump White House has been participating and helping the Biden team be ready to go on the minute that a winner is clear. So that's been going on behind the scenes. But more upstage, if you will, there has been this posture from the president that he's simply not accepting the results. I mean, tonight there's a lawsuit filed in Arizona over digital vote counting machines and this notion that some people's votes may not have counted in and around Phoenix. It's interesting, you know, Arizona has not been projected by CBS News in this race yet, and it's not included in the 279 electoral votes that we project that Joe Biden has won. The Trump camp, however, is taking the posture that it thinks it can overtake Mr. Biden's lead in Arizona. Otherwise, in various places, there has been a constant stream of and consistent stream of innuendo that somehow fraud took place in Pennsylvania because there Trump poll watchers were allowed to watch the counting, but not perhaps as close as they wanted to watch it. Rudy Giuliani, the president's private lawyer, said today that 600,000 ballots have been illegally counted. How it is he came to that conclusion, that specific number, 600,000, what he hopes to do about it. Those are questions we can't answer. Peter Mayer, your thoughts as we await the new president who's arriving right now at the Chase Center in Wilmington, Delaware tonight.
Well, it's going to be quite a moment after this long and arduous campaign, a campaign that, of course, has been overshadowed from the very get-go by the COVID pandemic and just the different tacts that each candidate, Trump and Biden, took during the campaign will be on display here again tonight. While there are a lot of people out there in Wilmington, and it's a little bit dark, I can't tell if they're wearing masks or not, we can be assured that Joe Biden will be wearing a mask if he's around anyone else, as will Kamala Harris and their families. But boy, lots of cars there in that drive-in movie-type setting outside the center where Joe Biden will be making his statement. And, Stephen, I can only imagine that once again, as we've heard in each of his appearances since Election Day, Joe Biden will be sounding a theme of unity, don't you think?
I do expect that. And we heard earlier from Bo Erickson, our reporter who's covered the Biden campaign, that he expects the same. He just happened to tweet, so I'll point it out, that from his vantage point, everyone he sees is wearing a mask at the Chase Center in downtown Wilmington on the riverfront there. It's a convention center in Wilmington, Delaware, and has been the headquarters for Joe Biden's campaign, for all of their public statements. This was the scene for the convention acceptance speech where Joe Biden spoke to the country and then came out, you remember, with his wife Jill, and there was the parking lot full of people with their lights flashing and horns honking, and it's a very similar scene tonight with cars decked out with Biden-Harris bumper stickers and waving American flags and blue lightsaber-type light sticks. So this is definitely a celebratory moment for the man who's about to become the 46th president 74 days from now. The motorcade has taken Joe Biden from his home in Wilmington to the Chase Center. And CBS's Nicole Skanga, who is Bo Erickson's counterpart who covered the Trump campaign, is with us now. Nicole, what do we now understand? What's the late news from CBS about the president's posture, about the possibility that he may well concede this race?
That's true. Now, CBS News has learned from two senior White House officials that if the president exhausts all of his legal options here, if it is clear that he will not be able to litigate his way to the 270 electoral votes needed to secure the presidency, he will in fact be willing to concede. But you wouldn't know that based on his latest statement today that he issued through the Trump campaign. The headline, "The election is not over." It's also the subject line of fundraising emails that the Trump campaign has been sending out to help finance its legal battle, plus some of its debt that it's accrued over months of this campaign. And on Twitter, the president today continued to allege conspiracy theories about fraudulent voting, claiming that he won by a lot. Of course, we know that's not true. Now, a senior campaign advisor tells me the president is frustrated, but up for a fight. They believe there is still a pathway to victory through lawsuits in Pennsylvania and in a series of other battleground states, but frankly, advisors have not been able to make the math work for them as they try desperately. Now, we've been pouring through these lawsuits most of this week. Already, GOP cases have been dismissed in a slew of states, Georgia, Nevada, just to name a few. At this point, it seems like an impossible battle. Meanwhile, here at the White House today, halls were quiet, even a bit eerie. This comes after Chief of Staff Mark Meadows tested positive for COVID-19, CBS News has learned, along with at least four other White House staff and a Trump campaign aide.
That's Nicole Skanga on the Trump beat following all the late developments. And you heard her say there that if the Trump campaign and the president believe that all legal avenues have been exhausted, first pursued and then exhausted, and if the count in the Electoral College stands at 270 electoral votes for Joe Biden, then the president will concede. Our colleague Weijia Jiang reports that there's a discussion about how soon might Joe Biden be invited to the White House. Remember that Donald Trump was invited to the White House alongside Barack Obama for a chat a few days after the election 4 years ago. The White House is not in any way indicating that that's in the offing, and pointing out that, well, in the case of George W. Bush in the year 2000, that invitation wasn't extended until mid-December. Well, of course, we all remember what happened in 2000. The election hinged on a few hundred votes in one state, in Florida, but the margins in the states where it mattered, in Pennsylvania, for example, tonight are upwards of 36,000. In Nevada, which CBS News projected earlier today, it was above 20,000. In Arizona right now, the margin that the president, that Biden has over the president is shrinking somewhat. And we mentioned the fact that the Trump campaign intends to initiate new litigation in Arizona. But we'll see if that's determinative of any kind of outcome. And there's no indication that it will be when it comes to the overall election election for president, we know by our own projections that irrespective of Arizona, that President-elect Biden has enough electoral votes to go on. Leonard Steinhorn, our CBS News political analyst, for your thoughts, Lenny, on the state of play as we await the speech of the president-elect.
Well, look, Joe Biden, this is a moment to celebrate. This is a moment to speak to the better angels of our nation, of our nature, as Abraham Lincoln once said, to be able to say that he will be president not just of a blue America or a red America, but all Americans. This is going to be Joe Biden's message, a sense that we have been divided at each other's throats, that we have to unify, come together, realize that we have far more in common than we have dividing each other. And so Joe Biden is going to try and be the president that he thinks has been lacking for these 4 years. Unity is going to be big, but let's be clear, those big statements are going to run up against some pretty tough rocks when Joe Biden arguably has to deal with a Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, and who will be blocking any number of the bills that Joe Biden wants to get done. But this is a moment to celebrate. There's still plenty of work for Joe Biden to do as President of the United States to think about all the issues that he has to address that he would like to get through Congress. But right now he's speaking to what he campaigned on, which is the soul of America, not the policies, but the soul. And that's going to be his big message tonight.
Leonard Steinhorn on the message that we expect to hear from the president-elect and the challenge for him ahead, if, as the people who voted for the president no doubt hope, Republicans are able to hold control of the Senate. Mitch McConnell spent 24 years in that body with Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. You're listening to the sound of cheering and people, the anticipation, really, outside the Chase Center in Wilmington, Delaware, as CBS News brings you live coverage of President-elect speech to the nation. I'm Stephen Portnoy, and you can hear the cheers there, the people waving flags and blue glow sticks, and even I see some men with a cardboard cutout of Joe Biden, the president-elect. People dancing and celebrating, cheering the fact that after 4 days, the election has been settled. Settled by a final tally of the votes in the states where it matters, where there's enough electoral votes for Joe Biden to become the next president. The overall popular vote in the country has Joe Biden with a lead of more than 4 million votes. It's 74.5 million votes for Joe Biden and 70.4 million for President Trump, or otherwise 50.5% of the vote, a majority for Joe Biden, 47.7% for President Trump. Let's turn once again to our political, to our legal analyst, Lori Levinson, about the legal path ahead. I mean, we've made a lot of reference to the fact that the president's campaign intends to drag this into court as long as it can and pursue every avenue it can. But what are the potential avenues that you've so far seen, Lori, or expect?
Well, I just looked at the lawsuit that was filed in Arizona today. And frankly, I think like the other lawsuits, it's too little, too late. The president is going after what we would call sort of the fringe votes, the problematic votes, but not the heart of what led to this election. And he's also going after it in a state that may not matter on the Electoral College. So they have a lot of work to do. This lawsuit cites six declarations from people who say that they went to vote and there were problems in the voting. That's not the type of lawsuit that I would expect to gain the traction he would need to overturn what we think is the election results.
Let me ask you quickly, Lori. When you hear the phrase illegal vote, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that they're using that for more political purposes than legal purposes. What makes a vote illegal may be a stroke of a pen, hitting the wrong button on a machine, taking in a ballot that is a duplicate. But he is suggesting that that means, by innuendo, widespread fraud. And that is not what we've seen yet in these lawsuits.
Lori Levinson's going to stay on top of this, as the Trump campaign says it's going to pursue all legal avenues, and only when those avenues are exhausted, we're now being told, will President Trump concede defeat to the man who has beaten the first sitting president in almost three decades. The last time, of course, was George Herbert Walker Bush being defeated by Democrat Bill Clinton in 1992. That is a feat that Clinton pulled off with the more electoral votes. In fact, in 1996, when he ran against Bob Dole, Bill Clinton wound up with 379 electoral votes, far more than anyone expects Joe Biden to get tonight. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have arrived at the Chase Center in downtown Wilmington, Delaware, and they're both going to address the country. And we will have that speech in just a moment. But first, this recap of the latest news, as I'm Stephen Portnoy in a CBS News special report.
CBS News Special Report, Election 2020, America Decides.
In Wilmington, Delaware, the nation's next president is about to speak. Joe Biden set to make his first comments since he won the necessary 270 electoral votes earlier today. Biden supporters everywhere are jubilant in Atlanta.
I like the fact that Biden shows a lot of empathy and wants to bring people together rather than just divide us into separate camps and tear the country apart, really.
Also in Washington, D.C., this man came with his family to the White House.
I brought my family because I want them to see this up front, to be a part of it, and feel the energy.
Mr. Biden's motorcade has now arrived at the Biden speech location in Wilmington, Delaware. In addition to addressing the American people, there will also be a celebration as well. We are told complete with fireworks. Kamala Harris will speak. And CBS News reports tonight that Mr. Biden plans to announce his own coronavirus task force on Monday. CBS News Special Report. I'm Steve Futterman.
And I'm Stephen Portnoy as we continue our CBS News special coverage of President-elect Biden's address to the nation. Let's go to CBS's Peter Mayer and pick up on a point we just heard from Steve Futterman about the fact that we expect that President-elect Biden will be announcing his own COVID-19 task force. Significant development, I think, that it illustrates that the incoming president is ready to take this issue head on and start hearing from the experts.
It's a very clear signal that dealing with this pandemic will be the top issue starting on day one. And, of course, tomorrow is going to be the first day of the rest of the transition, and Monday will probably be get down to business day, and that's when he's going to announce this panel on the pandemic. It will be led by two highly respected public health leaders, the Obama-era Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, and the former Food and Drug Administration Chief, David Kessler. So they will be, you know, laying out the exact agenda that President-elect Biden plans to take on the pandemic. And, boy, we just don't have to go back into the numbers. Everyone in this country is well aware that this pandemic is raging now, and we're approaching, what, 10 million cases and more than 230,000 deaths since the start of the pandemic here in this country. And, of course, President Trump's management, the way he has handled this was very much a part of the referendum.
And the concerns about the coronavirus were a major motivating factor for voters who voted for Joe Biden. And many of those people who support the incoming president are now cheering and applauding and waiting for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to address the country in a stage that's been set in front of the Chase Center, which is a convention center in Wilmington, Delaware. And we can see a row of American flags in front of a podium that's been set up with two large television screens that have the Biden-Harris campaign logo, American flags all over the scene. And something else interesting I just realized, in a wide shot of the crowd, all the vehicles that have been arrayed in the parking lot appear to be the colors red, white, and blue. Peter Mayer, do you see that?
Sure do, and I hadn't noticed it until you pointed it out. Amazing. That's a good point of optics and staging by the Biden-Harris people. And, you know, you have to know that sitting inside the White House tonight, we're not sure if Donald John Trump is watching this scene, but he has to be able to hear the cacophony that's going on outside the White House. You and I both know from working there that when you're in the press room on the West Wing, you can hear the noise if there are demonstrations outside. And as he returned from golfing in Virginia today, President Trump obviously saw these crowds. Not exactly a welcome scene for him as he came back to the White House after being away for several hours. And I just have to think that up in the White House residence, he could hear this. You know, the Johnson daughters, Lyndon Johnson's daughters, often spoke of how their dad could hear the anti-war demonstrations from upstairs in the residence, and most likely Mr. Trump can hear what's going on outside tonight.
I think there's a good chance that he did hear it. And as you say, there's a cacophony that continues outside the White House tonight. Leonard Steinhorn was among the throngs at what is now known as Black Lives Matter Plaza in downtown D.C., just in front of the White House and north of Lafayette Square. So, Lenny, once more on what it is you saw and heard and felt today.
Well, you know, you dial back 5 months, and the anger and grief over George Floyd's death, the sense that something had gone wrong with this country and that people were determined to change it. Well, that determination was channeled into joy and happiness among so many of those people who actually may have marched at Black Lives Matter Plaza 5 months ago, 4 months ago. They feel now that they have been delivered, that there's this sense of redemption for all of the work and energy that they put in to raise the issues that America had gone wrong, that need to be fixed. They feel at this moment that their voices had been heard. It doesn't mean that they think there's going to be a magic wand with the Biden-Harris administration and it's going to solve all the problems. But one of the most important things in politics, part of it is solution, but it's also being heard. And I think that was the sense of so many people today, a sense of validation, of being heard, and celebrating that part of democracy, because that really is the essence of who we are as a country, the ability for people to be heard by our leaders, to vote, to make their voices heard, and to be able to see that energy result potentially in politics that will address the problems of our society and create the solutions that are necessary.
Peter Mayer, 30 seconds. We're about to hear what we think from the Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, and she'll introduce the President-elect. A defining moment for the incoming administration.
Well, it certainly is, and it's going to be the celebration, because it occurs to me that after what Leonard Steinhorn and hundreds of others witnessed today and the scenes unfolding from Los Angeles to New York to Atlanta and many places in between, the celebrations are going to be over quite quickly, and the very serious business of starting this new administration is going to be taking place. And we're going to hear the blueprint for that, the beginning of it tonight, and what is always a positive speech by a president-elect and a call for unity. And it's going to be hard to get that unity anytime soon, if ever, when you consider the more than 70 million voters who also supported Donald Trump. And they are not celebrating tonight, are they?
They are not. In fact, they're defiant in saying that the election has been stolen from the president. Up on the screen,
please welcome the Vice President-elect of the United States of America, Kamala Harris.
Well, here comes the Vice President-elect, Kamala Harris, wearing a mask, a white pantsuit, waving to the crowd on the screen. The words, the people have chosen empathy. The people have chosen hope. The people have chosen science. Kamala Harris continues waving to the crowd from behind plexiglass screens that have been set up, no doubt, by the Secret Service or at their insistence. The people in the crowd at the parking lot of the Chase Center wave American flags and cheer and applaud. Kamala Harris making her way back to stand behind the podium. Let's listen in.
Good evening. Good evening. Thank you. Thank you. Good evening. So, thank you. Good evening. So, Congressman John Lewis, before his passing, wrote, democracy is not a state, it is an act. And what he meant was that America's democracy is not guaranteed. It is only as strong as our willingness to fight for it. To guard it and never take it for granted. And protecting our democracy takes struggle. It takes sacrifice, but there is joy in it, and there is progress, because we, the people, have the power to build a better future. And when our very democracy was on the ballot in this election, with the very soul of America at stake, and the world watching, you ushered in a new day for America. To our campaign staff and volunteers, this extraordinary team, thank you for bringing more people than ever before into the democratic process. And for making this victory possible, to the poll workers and election officials across our country who have worked tirelessly to make sure every vote is counted, our nation owes you a debt of gratitude. You have protected the integrity of our democracy. And to the American people who make up our beautiful country, thank you for turning out in record numbers to make your voices heard. And I know times have been challenging, especially the last several months. The grief, sorrow, and pain, the worries, and the struggles. But we have also witnessed your courage, your resilience, and the generosity of your spirit. For 4 years, you marched and organized for equality and justice, for our lives, and for our planet. And then you voted. And you delivered a clear message. You chose hope and unity, decency, science, and yes, truth. You chose Joe Biden as the next president of the United States of America. And Joe is a healer, a uniter, a tested and steady hand, a person whose own experience of loss gives him a sense of purpose that will help us as a nation reclaim our own sense of purpose, and a man with a big heart who loves with abandon. It's his love for Jill, who will be an incredible First Lady. It's his love for Hunter and Ashley and his grandchildren and the entire Biden family. And while I first knew Joe as vice president, I really got to know him as the father who loved Beau, my dear friend who we remember here today. And to my husband, Doug, and our children, Cole and Ella, and my sister, Maya, and our whole family, I love y'all more than I can ever express. We are so grateful to Joe and Jill for welcoming our family into theirs on this incredible journey. And to the woman most responsible for my presence here today, my mother, Shyamala Gopalan Harris, who is always in our hearts. When she came here from India at the age of 19, she maybe didn't quite imagine this moment, but she believed so deeply in an America where a moment like this is possible. And so I am thinking about her and about the generations of women, black women, Asian, white, Latina, Native American women who throughout our nation's history have paved the way for this moment tonight.
women who fought and sacrificed so much for equality and liberty and justice for all, including the black women who are often, too often, overlooked, but so often prove they are the backbone of our democracy. All the women who have worked to secure and protect the right to vote for over a century, 100 years ago with the 19th Amendment, 55 years ago with the Voting Rights Act, and now in 2020 with a new generation of women in our country who cast their ballots and continued the fight for their fundamental right to vote and be heard. Tonight I reflect on their struggle, their determination, and the strength of their vision to see what can be unburdened by what has been. And I stand on their shoulders. And what a testament it is to Joe's character that he had the audacity to break one of the most substantial barriers that exists in our country and select a woman as his vice president. But while I may be the first woman in this office, I will not be the last. Because every little girl watching tonight sees that this is a country of possibilities. And to the children of our country, regardless of your gender, our country has sent you a clear message. Dream with ambition, lead with conviction, and see yourselves in a way that others may not, simply because they've never seen it before. But know that we will applaud you every step of the way. And to the American people, no matter who you voted for, I will strive to be a vice president like Joe was to President Obama, loyal, honest, and prepared, waking up every day thinking of you and your family. Because now is when the real work begins, the hard work, the necessary work, the good work, the essential work to save lives and beat this epidemic, to rebuild our economy so it works for working people, to root out systemic racism in our justice system and society, to combat the climate crisis, to unite our country and heal the soul of our nation. And the road ahead will not be easy, but America is ready. And so are Joe and I. We have elected a president who represents the best in us, a leader the world will respect and our children will look up to, a commander-in-chief who will respect our troops and keep our country safe, and a president for all Americans. And it is now my great honor to introduce the President-elect of the United States of America, Joe Biden.
Vice President-elect Kamala Harris steps down from the podium and outcoming with a bit of a jog. 77-year-old President-elect Joe Biden, wearing a suit, blue tie, and a mask, continuing to jog down the ramp, gives a double fist pump to his running mate, Kamala Harris. He waves to the crowd, waving back with American flags. The ticket is now standing side by side in front of the podium, basking in the applause and adulation of hundreds of people gathered at the Chase Center in Wilmington, Delaware. Kamala Harris said that the people who elected Joe Biden president and her vice president have ushered in a new day for America, choosing hope and unity, decency, science, and yes, she says, truth. Here's President-elect Joe Biden, live coverage from CBS News.
Hello, my fellow Americans, and the people who brought me the dance, Delawareans. I see my buddy, Senator Tom Carper down there, and I think Senator Coons is there, and I think the governor's around. Is that Ruth Ann? And that former Governor Ruth Ann Minner. Most importantly, my sisters-in-law, my sister Valerie. Anyway. Folks, the people of this nation have spoken. They've delivered us a clear victory, a convincing victory, a victory for we the people. We've won with the most votes ever cast on a presidential ticket in the history of the nation. 74 million. What I must admit has surprised me, tonight we're seeing all over this nation, all cities and all parts of the country, indeed across the world, an outpouring of joy, of hope, renewed faith in tomorrow, bring a better day. And I'm humbled by the trust and confidence you placed in me. I pledge to be a president who seeks not to divide, but unify. Who doesn't see red states and blue states, only sees the United States. And work with all my heart, with the confidence of the whole people, to win the confidence of all of you. And for that is what America, I believe, is about. It's about people. And that's what our administration will be all about. I sought this office to restore the soul of America, to rebuild the backbone of this nation, the middle class, and to make America respected around the world again, and to unite us here at home. It's the honor of my lifetime that so many millions of Americans have voted for that vision. And now, the work of making that vision is real. It's a task, the task of our time. Folks, as I said many times before, I'm Jill's husband. And I would not be here without her love and tireless support of Jill and my son Hunter and Ashley, my daughter, and all our grandchildren and their spouses and all our family. They're my heart. Jill's a mom, a military mom, an educator. And she has dedicated her life to education. But teaching isn't just what she does, it's who she is. For American educators, this is a great day for y'all. You're going to have one of your own in the White House. And Jill's going to make a great first lady. I'm so proud of her. I'm the honor of serving with the fantastic vice president you just heard from, Kamala Harris, who makes history as the first woman, first black woman, the first woman from South Asian descent, the first daughter of an immigrant ever elected in this country. Don't tell me it's not possible in the United States. It's long overdue. And we're reminded tonight of those who fought so hard for so many years to make this happen. But once again, America's bent the arc of the moral universe more toward justice. Kamala, Doug, like it or not, your family, you become an honorary Biden, there's no way out. All those of you who volunteered and worked the polls in the middle of this pandemic, local elected officials. You deserve a special thanks from the entire nation. And to my campaign team and all the volunteers and all who gave so much of themselves to make this moment possible, I owe you. I owe you. I owe you everything. And all those who supported us, I'm proud of the campaign we built and ran. I'm proud of the coalition we put together, the broadest and most diverse coalition in history. Democrats, Republicans, independents, progressives, moderates, conservatives, young, old, urban, suburban, rural, gay, straight, transgender, white, Latino, Asian, Native American. I mean it, especially those moments, and especially those moments when this campaign was at its lowest ebb. The African-American community stood up again for me. You always have my back, and I'll have yours. I said at the outset, I wanted to represent this campaign to represent and look like America. We've done that. Now that's what I want the administration to look like and act like. For all those of you who voted for President Trump, I understand the disappointment tonight. I've lost a couple times myself, but now let's give each other a chance. It's time to put away the harsh rhetoric, lower the temperature, see each other again, listen to each other again. And to make progress, we have to stop treating our opponents as our enemies. They are not our enemies. They are Americans. They are Americans. The Bible tells us to everything there is a season, a time to build, a time to reap, and a time to sow, and a time to heal. This is the time to heal in America. Now this campaign is over. What is the will of the people? What is our mandate? I believe it's this. Americans have called upon us to marshal the forces of decency, the forces of fairness, to marshal the forces of science and the forces of hope in the great battles of our time. The battle to control the virus, the battle to build prosperity, the battle to secure your family's health care, the battle to achieve racial justice and root out systemic racism in this country. And the battle to save our planet by getting climate under control. The battle to restore decency, defend democracy, and give everybody in this country a fair shot. That's all they're asking for, a fair shot. Folks, our work begins with getting COVID under control. We cannot repair the economy, restore our vitality, or relish life's most precious moments, hugging our grandchildren, our children, our birthdays, weddings, graduations, all the moments that matter most to us until we get it under control. On Monday, I will name a group of leading scientists and experts as transition advisors to help take the Biden-Harris COVID plan and convert it into an action blueprint that will start on January the 20th, 2021. That plan will be built on bedrock science. It will be constructed out of compassion, empathy, and concern. I will spare no effort, none, or any commitment to turn around this pandemic. Folks, I'm a proud Democrat, but I will govern as an American president. I'll work as hard for those who didn't vote for me as those who did. Let this grim era of demonization in America begin to end here and now. The refusal of Democrats and Republicans to cooperate with one another, it's not some mysterious force beyond our control. It's a decision. a choice we make. And if we can decide not to cooperate, then we can decide to cooperate. And I believe that this is part of the mandate given to us from the American people. They want us to cooperate in their interest. And that's the choice I'll make. And I'll call on Congress, Democrats and Republicans alike, to make that choice with me. The American story is about slow yet steadily widening the opportunities in America. And make no mistake, too many dreams have been deferred for too long. We must make the promises of the country real for everybody, no matter their race, their ethnicity, their faith, their identity, or their disability. Folks, America has always been shaped by inflection points, by moments in time where we've made hard decisions about who we are and what we want to be. Lincoln in 1860, coming to save the Union. FDR in 1932, promising a beleaguered country a new deal. JFK in 1960, pledging a new frontier. And 12 years ago, when Barack Obama made history, he told us, yes, we can. Well, folks, we stand at an inflection point. We have an opportunity to defeat despair, to build a nation of prosperity and purpose. We can do it. I know we can. I've long talked about the battle for the soul of America. We must restore the soul of America. Our nation is shaped by the constant battle between our better angels and our darkest impulses. And what presidents say in this battle matters. It's time for our better angels to prevail. Tonight, the whole world is watching America. And I believe at our best, America is a beacon for the globe. We will not lead. We will lead not only by the example of our power, but by the power of our example. I've always believed, many of you heard me say it, I've always believed we can define America in one word, possibilities. That, in America, everyone should be given an opportunity to go as far as their dreams and God-given ability will take them. You see, I believe in the possibilities of this country. We're always looking ahead. Ahead to an America that's freer and more just. Ahead to an America that creates jobs with dignity and respect. Ahead of America that cures diseases like cancer and Alzheimer's. Ahead to an America that never leaves anyone behind. Ahead of America that never gives up, never gives in. This is a great nation. It's always been a bad bet to bet against America. We're a good people. This is the United States of America. And there's never been anything, we've been not able to do when we've done it together. Folks, in the last days of the campaign, I began thinking about a hymn that means a lot to me and my family, particularly my deceased son, Beau. It captures the faith that sustains me, and which I believe sustains America. And I hope it can provide some comfort and solace to the 230,000 Americans who've lost a loved one to this terrible virus this year. My heart goes out to each and every one of you. Hopefully this hymn gives you solace as well. And it goes like this. And he will raise you up on eagle's wings, bear you on the breath of dawn, and make you to shine like the sun, and hold you in the palm of his hand. And now together, on eagle's wings, we embark on the work that God and history have called upon us to do. With full hearts and steady hands, with faith in America and in each other, with love of country, a thirst for justice, let us be the nation that we know we can be, a nation united, a nation strengthened, a nation healed. The United States of America, ladies and gentlemen, there's never, never been anything we've tried we've not been able to do. So remember, As my grandpa, our grandpa, he said, when I walked out of his home when I was a kid up in Scranton, he said, "Joey, keep the faith." And our grandmother, when she was alive, she yelled, "No, Joey, spread it. Spread the faith. God love you all. May God bless America, and may God protect our church." Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Live from Wilmington, Delaware, the president-elect of the United States, Joseph Robinette Biden, Jr., age 77, become the president of the United States in 74 days, tells America this is the time to heal, time to lower the temperature, to listen to each other again. He says, let this grim era of demonization begin to end here and now, pledging to be a president that doesn't divide, but unifies. I'm Stephen Portnoy. This is live coverage from CBS News. Joe Biden continues standing on the stage in front of the Chase Center. His wife, Jill Biden, is coming out on stage, the future First Lady of the United States, waving to the crowd. Let's briefly turn to Leonard Steinhorn, our CBS News political analyst. Lenny, it's been a while since we've heard a speech like this.
Well, it was a powerful speech. It was a Joe Biden speech. He spoke about his family, but his family was a metaphor for what he wants to see about America, an inclusive, unified America, an America that, as he said, that leaves this grim era of dehumanization behind. It was an America about healing the wounds, bringing the people together, ending the divisions. He draws on Abraham Lincoln, Franklin Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy, Barack Obama, and he wants to see his administration in the larger-than-life administrations that came before him, one that will bring the people together, address our problems, and do it not with bitterness and despair and divisiveness, but with a sense of unity and humility and determination to address the needs of the people, whether they live in blue states or red states. He said, this is the United States of America. This was a very, very good first introduction to a president-elect Joe Biden.
The president-elect is standing on stage with the future First Lady and the members of the Biden family, including son Hunter and all the grandkids. And now here comes Kamala Harris and her husband, Doug Emhoff, soon to be the second gentleman of the United States. Not second lady, second gentleman. Peter Mayer, quickly, your thoughts as you watch this scene unfold tonight, the future president and vice president of the United States.
Well, a trademark Joe Biden speech for those of us who've covered him for many years. He repeatedly invoked folks, folks. He loves to address the public that way. Donald Trump was only mentioned once, and it was not Donald Trump, it was Trump. To Trump supporters, he called for a time of unity. And this was certainly a speech that was a sharp contrast to Donald Trump's American Carnage inaugural address. Spread the faith, said Joe Biden, as he prepared to bring the families on the stage, and they're all out there now in Wilmington, Delaware.
And he said, together we'll fly on eagle's wings. It's interesting to note all the people on stage, except for the vice president, the president-elect, are wearing masks. Confetti's flying. Celebration continues in Wilmington, Delaware. For my colleagues, I'm Stephen Portnoy, and you've been listening to a CBS News special report.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Lisa Mateo. After nearly 4 days of counting votes, Joe Biden can now be called the president-elect.
I sought this office to restore the soul of America, to rebuild the backbone of this nation, the middle class, and to make America respected around the world again.
Biden speaking just now for the first time to the country in his new role. About 360 cars lined up at the drive-in rally in Wilmington, Delaware to join in on the celebration. The victory also marks a milestone for the nation as Vice President-elect Kamala Harris becomes the first woman and first African-American and South Asian elected to the position. Political analyst Larry Sabato on the daunting task ahead for the president-elect.
Biden faces the same problem that Donald Trump faced, which is deep division. We all know that President Trump didn't care very much about it and certainly didn't do anything about it, rarely reached out to anybody who wasn't in his base. Biden obviously has a different approach.
CBS News correspondent Ed O'Keefe explains what led to Biden's success.
His theory of the case was, I am the more moderate, mainstream guy who can win back those states that they appear to have done. And he knew that supporting those kinds of policies, or at least talking about them and appearing to embrace them, would be anathema to too many people.
In New York City, hundreds joined in on the excitement. The Empire State Building is lit up this evening in red, white, and blue to commemorate the presidential victory. But the president still has not conceded, citing voter fraud. Mr. Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani.
As a friend of mine says, I don't believe in conspiracies, but I also don't believe in coincidences. Kind of funny that all Republicans were rejected here, and all Republicans were rejected in Pittsburgh, and it amounts to about, just about the 700,000 votes that President Trump was ahead by 2 days ago that disappeared.
CBS's Vicky Barker has reaction from overseas.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson saying that he looks forward to working closely with the new president on, quote, shared priorities. In fact, Johnson had declined to state a preference in the U.S. race, unlike German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who made no secret that she was hoping for a Biden win.
And Tropical Storm Ada has left behind a path of destruction in Guatemala. About 150 people have died or remain unaccounted for. Tropical storm warnings have been issued for southern Florida and the Florida Keys, where forecasters say the storm is expected to reach there tomorrow. This is CBS News.